they're not saying that about this podcast, but it could be implied. I am your host, Dan Hummer, for the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast, and I'm here with my big brother, Dougie.
Yo.
And I'm also here with my little handsome man, Eric.
Aw, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. How's everybody doing tonight?
Every time I call him a little handsome man, he expects a file of restraining order. You do it, and you get an ah.
Well, you're more creepy.
Or an aw. What does that have to do with? It's
the delivery. Kurt Angle's top 10 moments in matches. That's what we're here to discuss tonight. Kurt had a legendary career, and he's one of our favorite wrestlers, collectively.
Oh, wait, we're doing Kurt Angle's match? I had a top 10 list of all of Fandango stuff. Shit.
Well, throw it out.
All right.
I didn't even know he had 10 matches. You know, and not to like break new, because we don't talk about current stuff on this very often. But the crazy thing about Dolph Ziggler getting cut.
Yeah.
And John Cena, like he posted it. He had 1,500 and like 70 something matches altogether.
Dolph?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he had been there. Like, he originally started in the company in 2004. And then, you know, in 2006, well, 2005, he got the big break, or not the big break, but he started on as Chavo Guerrero's caddy when Chavo was Terwin White.
Yeah.
The Latino turned white guy who was racist against other Latinos.
Yeah. Terrible.
And then, you know,
his slogan was white is right.
Yeah. It was actually, it started being, if it ain't white, it ain't right. And then the NAACP is just like,
Yeah,
that ain't happening.
And then Eddie died and he's like, all right.
Yeah, it was stupid. So then, yeah. You know, Dolph went away. Then, you know, Spirit Squad happened. And he was Nikki.
Yeah.
And then, you know, luckily that died. And then in 2008, you know, he was Dolph Ziggler. And he comes, hey, how you doing? I'm Dolph Ziggler. You know, doing like that gimmick. Where
yeah,
he was,
the perfection.
Yeah. Like when he would come, like the first time he was on TV, he goes up to Mike Adamley, who was the general manager at the time. He goes, hey, how you doing? I'm Dolph Ziggler. And Mike Adamley goes, I know who you are. I signed you, for crying out loud.
I think he kind of finally settled into like the show off shit.
Yeah.
And they started doing that. He started like shaking his ass more and stuff.
Yeah. Like 2010, 2011-ish is when he really
hit his stride.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and he was challenging for world titles, and he was, you know, had the thing with Vicky Guerrero.
It put him in a lot of dumb shit, but he was a really talented wrestler.
Yeah.
Even though he was just on your top 10 least favorites and you were talking a bunch of shit about him. As a wrestler and as a performer, I think Dolph Ziggler, I called him overrated and underrated at the same time, and I think that's a pretty good definition for him.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people think, like, what's the hoopla? But then a lot of people are like, this guy does not get enough attention. And
yeah, there was a couple of disappointing releases yesterday.
Yeah.
Dolph not being one of them.
It's still like,
I was shocked with release.
To me, it's like, make him an agent, though, or something. Yeah. Well, to me, it's like, if you're going to reward loyalty to, like, everybody else, like, it's just WWE picks and chooses who they reward loyalty to.
Well, and also, too, I had read something earlier. Dolph has been trying to get out of there for years.
Oh, when AEW started, he was trying to leave.
Yeah. But they're
going to AEW?
Probably.
More than likely. But they're just like, we need you, stay, you know, all that stuff. So he's like, all right, fine. But like a couple of depressing releases to me yesterday. One, obviously, Shelton Benjamin. Even though they really weren't doing much with him. But, you know, Shelton's one of those guys, like, it was depressing when he got released in 2010.
To me, that's another one. Like, make him an agent. or something. Like, fucking give him a different role in the company. Something like, he could be a great agent and train, like, young athletic guys up. Like, why can't, like, it doesn't make sense to me to, like, take a guy like Shelton who's giving you nothing but loyalty and, like, all right, see you, bub.
Yeah. And then, like, Mustafa Ali, who was actually set to wrestle at the NXT pay-per-view next, or premium live event next week.
I understand, but let's be honest, that kid was a bust. How many opportunities, how many shots? He never got over, and he never was there.
What I'm saying is that, like, I'm surprised that they're – because they advertised a match with him and Dominic.
I get with the scheduling stuff. I understand all that. I'm just saying Mustafa Ali as a whole, I don't totally hate the decision of saying let's
– Well, he wanted to be gone anyway.
Yeah, they didn't get enough on their investment. The kid, like, he just never really had it.
I mean, he's been trying – he put in for – he requested his release, like, a year ago. And they're like, no, you're staying.
But he also got a raw deal when he got hurt and Kofi took his spot. Because Kofi looked really good one night when he was supposed to look good, but Kofi looked better, and that's how wrestling goes sometimes, and Kofi got his shot. And Kofi got his push.
Right.
And then ever since then, they tried to kind of, like, give him things besides that, like the Reckoning shit. Is that what it was called? The Reckoning?
Retribution, maybe?
Retribution, yeah. And that shit just never worked. It just – he's just kind of a bum.
Can't get over.
I don't hate him. Like, you and it's fine in the ring and stuff, but to me, he just never worked.
Yeah, like, you knew – like, I knew back in, like, the Thunderdome era when he wasn't going to work out, when he came back, he made, like, this big return one week, and he sided with Ricochet – and Apollo Crews, and I think Cedric Alexander, whatever, when they were being recruited by the Hurt Business, but they didn't want to join the Hurt Business.
Yeah.
So, like, they were kind of just – so he kind of joined up. He was a surprise for a six-man tag. And then, like, the next week, because Bobby Lashley was not selling for anybody or bumping for anybody, they booked him in a match – Ali in a match with – Lashley, and Lashley just beat the shit out of him for like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, he has a big return, and because you have this guy who thinks he is the love child of Brock Lesnar and Goldberg, that he, you know, that he doesn't have to sell. Like, I didn't like that almighty Hurt Business Bobby Lashley shit. Like,
even though it's, like, what propelled his career and why people love him.
Well, I know. What I mean by that is that, like, the whole, like, all indestructible and all that shit.
Okay.
I was not a fan of that because it made too many guys look weak. Like,
to me, that's what they had to do, though, to get Bobby over. Because remember, Bobby was a failed experiment until this point. Even him coming back, the shit back in the day with ECW, nothing worked with Bobby, ever. And then they finally said, all right, let's give him the Brock treatment and make him unbeatable, and that's what made him work.
And that's fine, but, like, when you're wrestling every guy and then you're doing main event pay-per-view title matches where guys have 15 seconds of offense and then MVP trips him up with his cane because he thinks he's slick, and then Bobby just beats the shit out of him for 25 fucking minutes. It's like, that's a pay-per-view fucking title match. You're telling me that you're not even going to give the guy, like, a hot comeback?
Yeah.
Like, no. Not. I can understand television.
Yeah.
Like, that's one thing, and I can understand, like, lower-level guys, but when you're doing it to guys like Drew McIntyre and Kofi Kingston, who are former champions, and, like, a Randy Orton?
Yeah.
Okay? No. Sell?
I get
at least
yeah.
give him a little bit of offense. Mm-hmm. Don't make him look like a fucking schmuck.
No, I get what you're saying. I just think that that's probably what needed to be done to finally make him over.
Yeah.
And that it worked. Like, no matter what you say, it worked.
No,
and everybody, like, knows it worked. And that's the first thing to work for him ever. So I get what you're saying, but I get what their minds that it's like, if we got to bury a bunch of people to make him, like, no one's never going to not love Randy anyway. Like, shit like that. I don't really blame them for doing that, but I can understand why you weren't entertained by it.
Yeah. I mean, again, that's just me, and I'm sure it's just me.
No, it's not a wrong opinion either. It's just, I feel like...
I agree with you, Doug.
I don't disagree. I just think the risk-to-reward ratio, they finally got the reward out of Bobby, so they were willing to take that risk.
Yeah.
Let's get to our list.
Oh, yeah, that's why we're here, right?
It is. Top 10 moments and matches by Kurt Angle. We have the list right here. And number 10 is Chris Benoit, Royal Rumble 2003.
So this
one is...
That
match.
What'd you think of it?
I thought it was a great match. I mean, these two are always have great matches. Probably one of their best matches they had one-on-one. When I looked it up, I think it was rated the highest match on paper between the two.
Was it? He already went. You go now.
Yeah.
He left dead silence.
With this particular match, and Kurt Angle has said before, like, because he talks on his show all the time, on his podcast, about how, like, you know, Benoit was one of his favorite opponents. And, like, he even said, he's like, I can't not talk about him. I can't not talk about my feud with him or give him his props for his ring work because that's half of my fucking career.
Yeah, and it's half of his best matches.
Yeah.
And that's like I don't blame him for saying that because it's true. Him and Benoit had some of the best chemistry he's ever had with anybody. And it's like... It's the same thing with, like, guys like fucking, like, I mean, Eddie and Benoit had good chemistry, too, but...
Jericho.
Some of his best matches are with Chris Benoit. Even, like, low-key, like, Triple H in their feud. Like, that Iron Man match, it would be talked about if what had happened did not happen.
Right.
It was a fucking fantastic match. But Kurt the most, though, Kurt is, like, kind of linked to Benoit in the Ruthless Aggression, Late Attitude Era.
Right.
Especially because they started... And the cool thing about this match is that it was finally starting to recognize that you don't have to be a juice head to hold the title. And you don't have to be a fucking big fucking Hulk Hogan, eat your vitamins like character to hold the title. You can have two guys who, let's not remember at WrestleMania like a couple years ago, or maybe a year ago, this was a mid-card match.
Right.
But now it's for the world heavyweight title.
A mid-card match that, by the way, had 6 days of build-up.
Exactly. Now it's for the WWE Championship. It's a big fucking deal. And it's these two, and it kind of showed that wrestling matters. And it was kind of, to me, it's one of the earlier representations. They were starting to do that around this time, but not really yet because you still had, like, we're prepping John Cena and Batista and those guys to make it. But... Because this is before Benoit and Eddie really, and this is when Paul was writing SmackDown, so SmackDown was the best show.
Right.
But
I was just going to say SmackDown was like the best wrestling show.
Yes. And these two were just a perfect encapsulation of that to me. And in this moment. And it just felt like wrestling really mattered, and it felt like two like high-level it felt like a UFC fight almost, even though it's not MMA, but it just felt like two guys that really want it, and it's not really too much of a storyline. It's just... They're going to wrestle and get their shit off, and the better man's going to win.
Right.
And it just had that feel, and it just felt gritty and tough, and both guys are doing what they have to fucking do to earn this thing. And Benoit seemed legitimate, even though you only really see him in a mid-card status until this point. But he looked like he was ready and like he deserved to be there. And Kurt was already the man by this point. So to me, this match really worked.
Yeah, because... Like, with this particular match, you know, they had kind of done, like, the feeling out process. You know, they were tag team champions for a little bit. Then they did, the feud. And then, you know, Kurt went with Paul Heyman. And then they got Team Angle. But it's just like, because they were always doing that feud. It's like, okay, can Benoit win the big one? And... You know, he wasn't able to yet, but that's because, you know, they were still in the process of grooming him. Like, he had his fans, like, or he had his supporters or whatever, but it's just like, okay, You know, they gave him, because you got to remember too with Benoit was given like a world title run in WCW, but he quit the next day. So like you got to look at it as, okay, he was going to be a world champion, and it's not like he was going to get like a big run, but it's been said that he was going to have the belt for like a few months. So he was going to get a run with it, but then lose it to Kevin Nash. But he gave that up. Now, obviously, he gave that up because he did not trust the guy that was booking him. But, like, so you have people back there who are also, like, back in 2003, I'm pretty sure that, you know, a lot of the guys that were working on their creative or the writing team or whatever in WWE 2003 were all actually still friends of Kevin Sullivan's.
Yeah.
Like Michael Hayes and Michael Hayes and Paul Heyman. Among others, I'm sure. So like a lot of them are just like, can we really trust this asshole? But you knew you could trust Kurt Angle because Kurt Angle was one of those guys, you know, you hear Triple H say all the time, you know, Kurt Angle picked this business up faster than anybody.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
And everybody will still tell you that to this day. And he's probably one of the best athletes to ever enter it, especially because, like, legit, we have to say it at one point today, won a gold medal with a broken neck, which is – just seems fucking impossible just to go against the greatest wrestlers, amateur – like, real wrestling in their prime at the fucking Olympics. And, like, he did the Olympic trials with a broken neck. He did, like, a tournament before that with a broken neck. And then he went to the Olympics with it, with doctors just shooting him up with, not Novocaine, something else. Maybe.
No, I think he said Novocaine, didn't he?
I feel like he did. But, like, 15 shots in his neck just so he didn't feel the pain during the match.
That's crazy.
And then after the match, he would just fucking feel nothing but pain. And that's how he finished the Olympics.
Did you tell Mindy to shut up?
No. I'll tell your mother to, though, if you want me to.
Yeah, please.
What were we talking about?
I think we're still on number 10. Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit. But no, you were talking about Kurt winning a gold medal with a broken neck.
Yeah, it's one of the most impossible, crazy things I've ever seen in my life.
Yep.
He's hilarious. He's the best athlete. There's just so many reasons and why I was so excited to do this list, because Kurt Angle is like in my top 10 favorites of all time. I love Kurt Angle. So, and yeah, if you haven't checked out the Rogan interview yet, I would recommend to go do that, because that just came out and you get a lot of insight into the man's life that you might not have known about.
Yeah, I added to my library for on my list.
But, all right, number nine,
the infamous milk truck segment.
Oh, my God, I remember watching this with so much fondness.
You loved it?
Yeah, because I was becoming a Kurt Angle fan, because for some reason I was buying him as a babyface. And, he, you know, he comes out and they were, and, you know, the whole invasion angle, which was kind of stupid to begin with, but like there were like bright spots.
I turned mine off, asshole.
Yeah. Well, that's just the person that was bugging you responding to me because I said bug off.
Oh.
Well, I didn't actually say that, but anyway, so like with Kurt and Austin. Which, by the way, like, we do have to talk about how the chemistry that they had with one another.
Yeah.
Which was funny. Even though I kind of liked it better when Kurt was the heel and Austin was the babyface.
Me too.
But, like, the whole thing, you know, at SummerSlam he got screwed because Austin beat up three referees.
Was Kurt the heel for this?
No, he was the babyface.
Yeah, and... I like, so which one did you like better, that or you liked Austin better as baby? What did you just say?
I said that...
you like Austin better as
baby? I thought like the feud worked better when Austin was the babyface, but this moment is like an exception.
See, I'd almost disagree because I love – was it the SummerSlam match when he had him tap out but the time limit went out? I love that.
It wasn't the time limit going out. Then it wasn't the time limit going out. It was the Austin hit four referees. So then Nick Patrick came out while Austin was tapping and then rang the bell.
Okay.
And then Austin attacked, but Nick Patrick was also, the heel alliance referee.
Hell yeah. But the milk truck thing is one of the best things I've ever seen.
What is the milk truck thing?
Oh, I love that.
Stone Cold Steve Austin back in the day. Well, a couple years before this. Was it 99 or 98?
99 is when Austin did the beer truck.
Right. So Vince McMahon and the corporation are the bad guys, right?
Right.
And Stone Cold is, like, obviously this, like, the working man, and that's why everybody loved him. And he's, like, the guy that's telling his boss to fuck off. Rock, Vince, and Shane are all in the ring. And Steve comes out on a beer truck and, like, sprays them with beer and floods the ring. And it's,
okay,
like, a huge moment. And it's, like, a big, like, people still talk about it. It was hilarious. And Vince is running around, like, so fucking falling over to himself. Rock's all freaked out. So you shoot up to 2001, and they're doing the whole WCW invasion thing. Austin finds himself on that side, and Austin's a bad guy now. And Kurt Angle's on the other side. So it's Kurt's turn to, like, do something like that. But Kurt's, like, a wholesome character. That's kind of was Kurt's whole thing. Was he's not, like, a drinker like that. He's a wholesome guy.
Right.
So he comes out on a milk truck, and he shoots Austin and all the WCW people with fucking milk.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's just as funny as the beer truck. It's almost better.
Yeah.
Which is funny because it's, like, a copy of that. But just Kurt fucking screaming, like, at the top of his lungs, squirting milk out.
And
that's hilarious.
They are going Milkomania's running wild or some shit. And then what's funny about that, and here's actually something that Kurt talked about, like, when they – remember the old Confidential show? So, like, when Kurt was on Confidential, like, a year or so later talking about that segment, he said, the worst part about that is I was covered in milk, and I couldn't even shower because I had to catch a flight back to Pittsburgh that day or, like, that night. So he had a midnight flight. It wouldn't have been midnight because they were on – Pacific time. So it was like a 9 p.m. flight, 9 p.m. Pacific, to get back to Pittsburgh. So he's on the plane and he smells like sour milk now because he's been in those clothes for like an hour.
Oh, man.
And the people on the plane are just like, you do know you smell like sour milk, right? And he's like, yeah, if you watch Monday Night Raw, you know why.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, like, he talked about that. He's like, maybe I should have showered after.
That's funny.
Yeah. But that, it was funny, in that moment, because they were doing, like, that Austin Appreciation Night or whatever.
Yeah.
And, like, everybody, they were all singing that Austin was, like, the wind beneath their wings or some shit like that. The wind beneath, or whatever the fuck the song was.
Yeah, the wind beneath my wings.
Thank you. And like everybody's singing it, and nobody could sing or shit. And Stephanie McMahon's got that breaks 10 mirrors at one time voice. So like they're all singing, and then Kurt comes out, and then Austin, you know, starts bullying Taz because everybody's got like an Austin 316 shirt on, and Taz is wearing a Taz shirt.
Yeah.
And so, like, it looks like he's getting ready to beat up Taz. Angle comes out in the milk truck. Sean Stasiak goes to attack Kurt, but Sean and Kurt just sidesteps him, and Kurt and Stasiak runs face first into the truck.
That was hilarious, because Stasiak was, like, doing that. That was his gimmick at that point.
Yeah,
was attacking people, and then, like, they run out of the way, and he gets his ass kicked.
Yeah, like, he did that the night before at SummerSlam. He tried to attack Rock twice and Kurt Angle twice.
And he fucking fell.
Yeah.
Like, it looked like an idiot.
Yeah.
I like that gimmick for for Sean.
Exactly. And, like, because the one time he was doing it, I think he was trying to attack, I forgot if it was Rock or Angle, but they were in William Regal's office because he was the WWF commissioner at the time. And Regal's got this statue of, like, a knight, like, right next to his desk.
Yeah.
And that's where either Rock or Angle was standing. They get out of the way, and Sean Stasiak starts running and runs right into the statue. And Regal just looks down just kind of like, huh, hello, and just goes back to writing, you know, writing on his notepad.
Yeah.
With his little pen with the feather on it. You know, like they did back in the 1800s, back in those British days.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, that was hilarious because, like, that again, like you said, that was Stasiak's gimmick, and it kind of worked for him.
Yeah.
I mean, not well, but.
But it worked.
Yeah.
Still worked.
The only thing he did that was over.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the Planet Stasiak stuff didn't work.
The milk thing was weird because it was probably the only thing about the storyline that did work. Because no one cared about Austin being a bad guy. Everybody wanted to love him. Nobody really gave a shit about WCW and ECW anymore. And that whole storyline felt stale. And the fact that you had WWE guys kind of going against WWE guys, it kind of muddied the waters. But this was the one, like, moment where we were all fucking into it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it got a great pop from the crowd. It just, everything about it was amazing to watch.
The rivalry is underrated, I think.
Yeah. Because everybody remembers the beer truck segment, but nobody really talks about the milk truck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. The next
That's
one
a good number nine.
That was number nine. Now, number eight, Shane McMahon at King of the Ring, 2001.
Oh, boy. This one is funny because, like, as good of a match as this was, like, this match was almost kind of snake bit because they were hitting each other so hard that, like, they were fucking, because it was a street fight, I believe, right?
Yes.
Like, Kurt broke his tailbone. He ended up with a concussion. Shane ended up with a concussion. Like, they both had to spend time in the hospital. Like, 5 minutes into the match, they were fucking.
Well, he fucking threw Shane around like a rag doll.
Yeah.
Though. He fucked Shane up.
Yeah, wasn't it an overhead belly-to-belly that was actually supposed to go through one of the plate glass King of the Ring things?
And he bounced off.
Yeah.
And fucking landed on his neck, didn't he?
Yeah. And, like, they thought Shane was out, and Shane just said to Kurt, he goes, it didn't work, do it again. And Kurt's just like, I almost killed you. He goes, I don't, do it again.
Yeah, that's the one. Shane always had balls.
Yeah.
No matter what you want to say about it. And he was always fine throwing his fucking body around. But those two just, it makes this list not only because it was amazing, but the fact that it should not have been as good as it was, especially with what you said with how many things went wrong during that match, but also just on paper, we're going to have our best amateur wrestler and the best guy that, like, knows the fundamentals versus the son of the owner of the company that can't really wrestle and throws baby punches, and we're going to put them in a street fight. Does not sound like it's going to be that entertaining.
Right, but also, too,
it was.
If you do street fights,
yeah,
Shane can do those.
Yeah, well, Shane can do anything because I think Shane's a good wrestler. People try, and he's not like AJ Styles or nothing, but Shane has put on good matches, and he's a very Jeff Hardy, like, he's a stunt performer.
Yeah.
He'll put his body on the line for a show.
But I think some of Shane's best matches are worst street fights.
Yeah, because the show
SummerSlam
with Kane.
SummerSlam 99 with Cass.
Yeah.
The match at WrestleMania 17 with his father.
That's the best match he's ever done.
Which has no business being good at all.
And it was so good.
Yeah. He did one with Rock, I think. That was like Falls Count Anywhere. Or
the Big
Party.
Show thing was cool. The Blackman thing was cool.
Yeah.
Most of his matches are street fights.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's what I mean, is that, like, he can do that stuff. Like, the matches he had with Kane, like a Last Man Standing, and then, like, the stretcher match or whatever.
Well, that's why the match with AJ just in a wrestling rig was, like, it's not the most exciting thing in the world.
Well, yeah, that's why a lot of people were just like, okay, it's just going to be a straight up WrestleMania. Like, Corey Graves got in trouble
for talking shit about it.
He's just like, it does nothing for me. And then Shane said to him, he goes, called him aside. And then, Corey Graves is just like, oh, yeah, like, I add controversy. And, you know, you told me to bring it to the table, so that's what I did. I brought it to the table. And then Peter Rosenberg's like, all right, well, what did Shane tell you? Bring that to the table. He goes, I ain't going to say anything. I got in trouble. So it's just one of those things where, like, Corey Graves has no problem, like, stirring controversy, but he will not tell you when he gets his ass chewed.
Yeah.
But getting back to Shane and Kurt, it's one of those things where, like, and remember, too, at that point, Kurt had wrestled 3 times. Yes, he did.
She doesn't agree.
Well, she hasn't seen the show. But, like, because Kurt was in the King of the Ring tournament.
Yeah.
He wrestled Christian and beat Christian. He lost to Edge in the final.
I always forget that was the same night.
Yeah. And then he wrestled the last game. With that King of the Ring tournament, like, the four guys in the tournament, like, it was so fucking stupid. Because there were four guys that were heels.
Yeah. Edge was heel?
They were starting the tournament babyface, but Edge and Christian and Rhino and Kurt, like, none of them were babyface.
Yeah.
I mean, shit, I think the only person that actually, the only babyface that was that actually advanced in the qualifier, the only babyface that qualified for the tournament was Jeff Hardy.
Damn.
So, like, it was such a weird tournament, but it's just like, I mean, also too, a lot of their baby faces at the time were just not, you know, they had a lot of mid-card baby faces, but they didn't have like a lot of top-tier baby faces. Like, Jericho and Benoit were doing the thing with Austin. Rock was off making a movie because he was starting to realize that he didn't want to wrestle anymore.
Yeah, turned out to be a good move.
Yeah. Well, James Gunn and Peter Safran will disagree with you. They actually wish he would have stayed in wrestling. One of the things, and then, like, you had Undertaker, who was doing the stupid stalker, the thing with DDP, where DDP was stalking his wife. Kane was Intercontinental Champion at the time. So, like, a lot of those top-tier baby faces were not, like, they were all busy doing, like, other things. And, like, King of the Ring was starting to get to the point where it wasn't important anymore.
Yeah.
So that's why, like, Edge and Christian and Rhino, like, it became a competition because those four guys were all friends. Because Edge and Christian were longtime friends with Rhino, and they had always teamed with Kurt.
Yeah.
So, like, it kind of made sense for the four of them to be in it, but it's just like the fans really didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
They started caring about Edge, like, a little after.
But the other matches on it, like, this is what made it.
Yeah. This, and then, obviously, that triple threat with Austin, Jericho, and Benoit, you know, where Booker T showed up. And attacked Austin in a match that actually Austin broke his back.
Yeah, because of Booker.
Yeah, because Booker threw him across the mat. And then, like, I think the actual plan was, like, when Austin broke his back, he's like, I have to drop the title. And yeah. Then Benoit broke his neck, and Jericho's like, I don't want the fucking thing. Jericho's the only one that came out of that match unscathed, but yet he didn't win the title because he's just like, I don't want it.
Did he really say he didn't want it?
I'm pretty sure, like, because I think Austin was trying to drop it to somebody because he broke his back because he knew he wasn't going to be able to work for a while.
Yeah.
But Benoit then knocked himself. Benoit broke his own neck by delivering, like, that back suplex off the top.
Yeah.
He delivered the move, but he landed wrong.
Ooh.
So,
Poor guy.
Yes.
But yeah, this match was awesome.
It was.
All right. Number seven?
I believe,
sorry.
Number seven, we have when he won the title off The Rock at No Mercy 2000.
I really do think a lot of people comment.
With a booger in his nose.
Yes. In his nose?
I think so.
Or
right?
Are you looking at me?
No. Didn't Kurt have a booger in his nose when he
won? I think he did.
Because Triple H made fun of it.
Yeah. But I think everybody saw this coming because Rock had been known for not having long title reigns.
Yeah.
I think this was actually the longest reign he had had.
How long was it?
Like 4 months.
There you go, Rick.
But, I mean, to me, it was time.
That's the cool thing about Rock, though, is I feel like he lost so much for such a top guy. Like, he was the opposite of a Hogan, you know? Like, whether or not Rock's a diva in Hollywood, I don't think he ever was in WWE.
He was never a diva here. Like, he's putting over fucking... Like, when they started that ascent for him to be, like, that top-level babyface, right, in 98, when he got, like, a couple months push as, like, the major babyface.
Yeah.
And then, like, the one pay-per-view, I think it was a Judgment Day pay-per-view, the same pay-per-view where Austin had the referee in the Undertaker Kane match. Rock was working Mark Henry. And everybody's just like, oh, you know, Rock, he's so over. He's, you know, one of the hottest stars in the company. And he lost to Mark Henry that night.
Yeah.
Who Mark Henry's biggest claim to fame at that point was he almost got to stick his tongue down China's throat.
He didn't even give birth to a hand yet.
Yeah. So, like, the fact that, you know, Rock is, you know, he, like you said, he lost so much, but it never hurt him.
No, because of that charisma.
Yeah.
But back to Kurt, this was a huge win for him.
Yeah, exactly.
It really was.
Oh, definitely.
Huh?
It's like the passing the torch.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, a lot of your big players were still... I think it was just, we need another guy besides Triple H and Rock.
Yeah.
We need somebody else. We need a nice, like, chicken shit heel to hold the title for a couple months. And that's kind of what Kurt was. I thought Kurt did a damn good job out of it.
Yeah.
Another match I want to, like, reference is, because it was around, I don't know if it was a part of this title reign, but I think it was the year later, 2001, when he held it. But when he had the match against Undertaker and he used the doppelganger, Kurt?
Oh, that was the next month at Survivor Series.
Oh, okay, so it's pretty time. But that, to me, it's like, that's a cool heel move, actually. Even though that dude looked nothing like fucking Kurt Angle.
Well, the hair kind of did.
Yeah, it did. But if you look at his
face.
And
by the way, that was his brother.
Okay.
That was Eric Angle.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
But to me, that worked. I enjoyed that.
I'll never forget when Undertaker hit Angle, you know, Eric Angle with that last ride. And Earl goes down, counts one, two, and then stops.
He's like, it's not him. It's not.
And then
like,
everybody's just like, wait a minute, did Earl sell out? And Undertaker looks like he's going to hit him. And then, like, Earl is trying to explain that's not Kurt.
Yeah.
But, like, Undertaker's not listening, and then Kurt comes up from behind, rolls him up, gets the pin.
It was so good.
Yeah.
Even though, like, I know, like, a lot of people say he didn't need the chicken shit because he was so legit as a wrestler, but to me it worked.
Angle was such, like, the first couple year Kurt Angle, like, up until, like, 2004 when he really started to get, like, aggressive and shit.
Yeah.
Like 2004, 2005, I mean, well, 2005, you know, towards the end of 2005, that's when he started getting, like, really creepy.
Yeah, I mean, I think the aggression really started in, like, 2003.
Yeah.
2002, once the hair went off, then he started getting really angry.
Yeah.
And I like that Kurt, too. I like intense Kurt.
Yeah,
but
that first couple of years, he was such a dork.
Yeah, he was. That's kind of what made him likable, too.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed, like, I still enjoyed a lot of his heel stuff, especially, like, the stuff that made him look like an idiot.
Yeah, because he was so good at it.
Like, even, like, in the Kurt babyface run, when Edge and Christian were looking for, like, a partner for the six-man tables match, and they went to Kurt, and they're like, hey, do you want to do this? And Kurt looked at them and said, you bet your sweet asses. And he walked away, and Christian just looked at him and said, did he just say we have sweet asses? And this is like the baby face Kurt Angle that's going to be sticking up for the company.
Yeah.
All right. And, like, he still had that moment where, you know, he was still kind of goofy. And even, like, too, like, the one night he teamed with Undertaker, and he came out and he had the red, white, and blue bandana on his head and the sunglasses. And Undertaker looks at him and says, what are you doing? He goes, well, you're the American badass. I'm an Olympic gold medal ass. And then he goes, and Stone Cold and Booker T together make up a horse's ass.
He was so funny back then.
And then he's just like, you know, it's kind of funny, but take off the bandana.
And this was a little later, but my favorite line from Kurt probably, because it's not on the list, and it is like heel 2003-ish Kurt when he's talking to Rey Mysterio. And he told this story.
Oh,
Hogan.
Yeah.
And this is like one of the clips. Like, this comes up in my Facebook algorithm all the fucking time. And I always see this segment. And it's when he's talking to Rey Mysterio in the ring. And he's like, you're just a boy. And me, I'm a man. And I'm a man that loves playing with boys. And he's like, wait. And the crowd's like in it too. And he's like, wait, let me refer. And then he like kept trying to say it a couple times, but it sounded weird each time. And it was just so funny. And it's, to me, it's like he always got the sense of humor. He never took himself too seriously, and that's what made him such a good character.
Yeah.
But, yeah, absolutely. What's the match we're on now?
So we are on number 7, so this was
Rock and No Mercy. This is pretty much, like, it was a good match. It was all right. It's not the most elite match on this list, but it's a big moment for him because he won the title.
Right. Exactly.
It's his first ever world
title. Yeah, it's his first title.
Yeah.
Especially against a huge name like Rock.
Exactly.
All right. For number 6, I have the crazy shit he did in TNA.
Which was a lot of it.
Basically, and he talked about his, like, drug use and pain pill addiction and stuff, too. And a lot of people call his TNA run Perk Angle.
Yeah.
Because that's when he was really, and he was just fucking going bananas and doing fucking backflips. And when he did that somersault thing off the stage onto Abyss, when he jumped off the didn't he do a shooting star press off the cage, or he did something off a cage, didn't he?
I think so. I remember a 450 he tried to do on Sting.
Yeah.
But he completely overshot it, and it just looked like a 450 knee drop.
Yeah. And all the crazy shit, starting the Main Event Mafia, just like those segments with the Main Event Mafia. I remember a lot of Kurt just screaming at the camera.
Yeah. he was getting to that point, like that was like the 2004-2005 Kurt Angle, where he was just like, he was very scary.
Mm-hmm.
And like here, like he was going around, he was just breaking people's ankles. I'll never forget like when he was starting, like when he came off, I think it was in 2008, when he came off. Like he was having issues with Karen, like him and Karen had officially broken up.
Yeah.
Like, or it had been made public that they had broken up, been made public. And like, he had to do a match. It was AJ and AJ Styles and Gail Kim and ODB versus Kurt Angle and the Beautiful People, Angelina Love and Velvet Sky.
Jesus.
And they were going to be main event. And Kurt Angle's trying to talk to them. And, like, all they care about is TMZ and talent scouts. And Kurt Angle looks at JB and says, see, this is why I hate women. And I was just like, and Papa's watching it with me. He goes, and he's just like, oh, boy.
That was funny.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, Kurt was fucking nuts back then. And, like, it's sad because, like, he was going through some real life problems
yeah.
and real issues, and that's not yeah. something to be laughed about. But the entertainment that he was giving us was fucking crazy. Like, he was just – because a lot of people – and we don't have a lot of TNA on this list because he has had so many – and it can also be a separate list down the line.
Yeah.
But because his WWE career to me was, like, so memorable, and that's what a lot of people saw. That's what the most eyes were on. So, like, let's provide yeah. a lot of that. But a lot of people will tell you, like, his TNA career might be better than his WWE career. I don't agree with that. I've always said – I'll say that about
Chris. I've said that. I'm one of them this. I've said that.
Yeah, and I don't knock people that say it. In my opinion, I think he just did too much in his short time in WWE to not be a WWE guy.
Right. Because
he did – like, he was the guy. World yeah. champion, all this shit, fucking kind of passed the torch to Cena. Like, he just did all the things, so – Christian, I'll always say that, way better in TNA than he ever was in WWE. But Kurt,
oh, yeah.
I'll say, when Kurt went to TNA, it was not just to get a paycheck. He put his all into everything he did. Even if he was fucking drugged out or whatever, like, he was fucking going ham.
I will say that about Christian, and I will also say it, if he would have stayed off the sauce, or, you know, off the extracurriculars, I would say that about Jeff Hardy. Them being more TNA guys.
I'll throw another one in the mix. Rhino.
Rhino just got, like, because
you
Rhino,
might say ECW more than anything, but,
yeah.
like, he had a pretty good TNA career.
He did, and, like, when he won yeah. that NWA title, which was pretty much just because they needed, like, a big moment, because Kevin Nash was going to win the NWA title at that Bound for Glory.
Yeah.
But then Kevin Nash, as per usual, got hurt.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're like, all right, we need a big moment, because Bound for Glory, it was always one of those.
It's sort of WrestleMania.
Yeah, and it's always one of those, we're sending the crowd home happy. Even if we don't want the guy that we're going to give the title to have the title that long, we're sending the crowd home happy.
Yes.
And so they yep. figure, they put Rhino for the Monsters Ball, where, you know, him and Jeff Hardy and Abyss and Sabu beat the fuck out of each other.
Yeah.
And then Rhino comes out, wins that 10-man gauntlet, which Jeff Hardy was a part of, and Don West and Mike Tenay lost their shit. They're like, how the hell? Because Jeff Hardy took that pile driver off the stage through the tables that night.
Yeah.
And that was like 10 minutes before this gauntlet.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, how the hell is this guy in this match? And Don West and Mike Tenay are losing their shit. Quick shout out to the two of them. Well, to Mike Tenay, and obviously rest in peace, Don West. They're getting inducted into the Impact Hall of Fame this year.
They deserve it.
At Bound for Glory. And I've watched that video. Yeah. I've watched the video of the announcement like 3 times. I've cried each time because I feel so good for both of them. You know, obviously Don won't be there to do a speech.
R.I.P. Don West. He wasn't a man.
Yeah. He won't be there to do a speech, but if he were there, it would be entertaining as all hell. But those two guys are one of the reasons, I think, why a lot of people fell in love with TNA.
And did he? Because he came back to TNA, like, before he passed, right?
Yeah, he did, like, some...
Because I remember seeing him doing a promotional video for an AJ Styles box set.
Yeah.
And it was like, and he's like, and if you like him now, which he was at WWE at the time, this is, like, 2018, 2017?
Yeah. Because he had done other, like, stuff, like, they were bringing him back for, like, the 15th anniversary or something like that. They would always have him do stuff for Slammiversary.
Okay, yeah.
Because he actually lived in the area where, like, he was in close vicinity to come do that stuff. They didn't want to pay for Tenay's plane.
Yeah, one of the more underrated color guys ever.
Yeah.
But, Kurt and TNA was definitely a treat. And if you can just look up, like, Perk Angle or Kurt and TNA, just do it. Because it's a fun YouTube video to watch.
Yeah.
He did some insane shit there. Let's go to number 5 now. And we're going to have our only TNA match on the list, Samoa Joe at Genesis 2006.
Yep.
So this was after the headbutt heard around the world.
Yeah.
Now, just me asking, is that even on the list, or should we have talked about that when we talked about all the crazy shit he did?
Just put it in here.
All right.
This is the last TNA thing.
So. Okay. So, Kurt debuts, like, they make the announcement in September of 06 that he's coming in. And they said, oh, it's real. It's damn real. And Jim Cornette, who was a member of TNA management at the time.
I did hate that, though. It's real. It's damn. Just like the Mr. Anderson shit. Like, do your own shit.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say you're a hate the fact that Cornette is part of management.
No. But it's like my thing in WWE. It's true. It's damn true. So now that I'm in TNA, it's like, come on, motherfucker. Just come up with a new slogan.
Exactly.
But continue.
Yeah. So they did a thing. Samoa Joe beat Jeff Jarrett at the September pay-per-view, and actually took the TNA title or the NWA title from Jeff Jarrett. Didn't win it, but he took it from him. He said, you don't deserve this because I beat you. Even though Jeff Jarrett was not scheduled to defend the title again until against Sting at Bound for Glory. Jim Cornette announces that Kurt Angle is going to be the special guest enforcer for Jarrett versus Sting. Samoa Joe had the title with him. He was not giving it up. So Jim Cornette calls Samoa Joe to the ring and says, you need to give me the damn title. We need it for Sunday. Samoa Joe told Cornette to go fuck himself, which a lot of people have. Especially on the show.
Yeah.
So then Kurt Angle makes the big debut, comes out and just headbutts Samoa Joe in the face, and then hits the Olympic slam. Well, then it looked like Joe was rising from the dead. He's got blood all down his face. He's pissed.
Yeah.
You know,
great moment.
Yeah. Basically, you know, that's how, Joe took a lot of his baby pictures, blood down his face, and was pissed. That's actually how he takes a lot of his pictures, actually. So they get into this big brawl. They decide, okay, we're gonna put the two of them. They called it the dream match of the decade. And it was like, I'm pretty sure it was actually the main event. Like, Sting and Abyss was the title match for that pay-per-view, and they didn't even go main event. Like, they gave it to these two.
Yeah.
Samoa Joe.
Rightfully so.
Huh?
I said rightfully so.
Yeah. Samoa Joe had a 17-month undefeated streak. Not been pinned in 17 months. And Kurt Angle submitted him.
Made him tap out.
Made him tap out. And it was just... By the way, I believe it actually did the most buy rates ever for a TNA pay-per-view. 60,000 buys.
It's not bad for them.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Great match, too.
Yeah.
Just like when we talk about the athleticism and the Benoit thing, like this felt like a UFC fight, too. Even though one of their later matches was like more actually like that.
Yeah.
This was like, it just had that big fight feel.
Yeah, and Samoa Joe was a perfect opponent for Kurt because he matched Kurt's, you know, intensity.
Yeah, and athleticism and power and all that.
And Kurt, Samoa Joe did not have a funny bone in his body.
No.
Except for when at the WrestleMania before he got released the first time in 2021 when they made him put on a poncho. They were starting to get rained out and him and Michael Cole were just standing there with fucking ponchos and you could look at Joe's face and be like, I look like an idiot right now.
That was funny though.
Yeah.
Joe can crack a one-liner every once in a while.
Every once in a while, if he wants to, he can crack a one-liner. The problem is he never wants to.
He's one of the most serious wrestlers out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. We want to go in on number four?
Sure.
Number four We have, and we talked about a little, because we did the Brock and Kurt episode not long ago.
Yeah.
We talked about it, but Brock Lesnar, SummerSlam 2003. In my opinion, their best match.
It was their best match because it was really showing Kurt as a babyface, and Brock was doing this whole new thing where, you know, he was kind of Vince McMahon's heavy.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Who took the angle slam in the chair? Was it Brock or was it Vince?
I think it was Brock.
Because I think Vince did take
it. Brock.
I don't remember.
But, like, they had the whole thing where, you know, Vince was trying to get Stephanie McMahon to quit, you know, as general manager of SmackDown. So he was trying to rule, but Stephanie wouldn't quit. So to punish Stephanie, he made her wrestle A-Train. And then...
yeah, she was underrated as a GM.
Yeah.
She was actually pretty good as a babyface.
And then, like, she... and then, like, Undertaker was trying to stick up for Stephanie. And, you know, he ended up wrestling A-Train at SummerSlam. And Sable was in the corner. And then Stephanie came out and... you know, kind of helped Undertaker. And then, like, you had this match where it was Kurt, you know, versus Brock. And, like, this was kind of showing, because Brock had gone on the tear where he had injured Brian Kendrick. He, like, absolutely almost fucking destroyed Zach Gowen.
Yeah.
To the point where, like, Zach Gowen was supposed to wrestle at SummerSlam against Matt Hardy, but it's just, like, he ain't going to make it.
Yeah.
Nope.
But this match was good because, like, and there was no fucked up spots in this match, which was kind of nice.
Yeah, because that's the only asterisk in the WrestleMania match.
Yeah.
Is so much that Shooting Star Press kind of threw a wrench in things.
Yeah, exactly.
But this did not have that. That's kind of what made it amazing.
No. It was a good story, too. Come back for Kurt Angle. Winning the title back.
Yeah.
And Kurt wasn't baby for this one, right? Or was he?
He was.
And I think that was always kind of the best for him and Brock.
Well, yeah, because Brock should be. Brock Lesnar Lesnar can be a natural heel if he's allowed to show, like, his comedic side, which he does so well, you know, on the Pat McAfee show at least.
Hell yeah! All right, yeah, that was very entertaining.
Yeah, don't break the table, bam!
Hey, break shit. All right. Probably, and one more funny moment, because this is not on the list, but before we get into our number three, right? Three?
Yeah.
Before we get into three, I do want to bring up the rap battle with John Cena.
Oh, my God.
And because that's the one funny thing that I kind of forgot to put on there. Because he had so many hilarious moments, like with singing with Austin and stuff. But when he rap battled Cena... And Cena's still, like, the bad guy, hip-hopper, like, fucking asshole. And Kurt
does the side hat.
Yeah, and he's being corny, and he's dancing, like how we dance.
Yeah.
And Taz is loving it, and the crowd's laughing. And then he finishes with the line, and he's like, "You can't beat me, no, no, no. I may suck, but you just blow." And fucking everyone starts laughing, and Cena's freaking out, and it was just so funny.
Yeah, like, when he was allowed to be
He was such a goofy, like, his, no offense, I'm not trying to call you goofy, but his, like, humor reminds me a lot of yours. And that's why I really, like, relate and find him hilarious, because sometimes you just tell, like, Kurt, just go be Kurt, and then he just comes out with crazy shit. Like, it doesn't even feel rehearsed, it doesn't feel like The Rock trying to come up with a funny line, it's just like Kurt being goofy, and that's what's hilarious.
Yeah. Like, the whole thing when he had, like, the little hat on his head.
Yeah.
That was, like, something, I think Austin tells a story about how, like, he was just going through, like, an airport gift shop or something.
Yeah.
And he decided, he's just, like,
he bought it, he's going through the airport with Deborah, and he sees like these hats or whatever, and he goes, I have an idea for a segment tonight. And so he bought, he got a cowboy hat for him. He got a cowboy hat for Vince. And then he got like the little thing with the string or whatever for Kurt, like the little kid's cowboy hat.
Yeah.
And he goes to Kurt and he goes, I have an idea for a backstage segment. And Kurt's like, all right, well, what is it? He goes, and he shows him what's in the bag. And Kurt's just like, okay. He goes, I'll do it.
He's like, the little one's mine, right?
Yeah.
And that was the Jimmy Crack Corn shit, right?
Yeah, that's how it started out with him getting ahead. He goes, I feel like a real cowboy.
This is so good. He was so funny. All right. Now, one of the best wrestling matches I've ever seen, number three, and we've talked about this at nauseam on this show probably, but it's just one of the best matches ever, so how can you not? Versus Eddie Guerrero, WrestleMania 20.
Yeah, which I'm pretty sure Eddie wanted Kurt to win.
Yeah, and because Eddie never really wanted to keep the belt, but because he didn't like the pressure.
Yeah.
But Kurt was really coming into his own as a villain and as a scumbag, and him kind of facilitating the whole Chavo thing and getting Chavo to turn on him, even though Kurt's supposed to be kind of a good guy and have Eddie's back, but he's kind of fucking him over and shit. And just all the little shit he was doing, he was slowly becoming a scumbag. But the buildup doesn't really, like, good story, whatever, but this is just one of the best in-ring matches I've ever seen. And Eddie getting his moment of victory at the end was just, and stealing it too in Eddie fashion, is just the best.
Yeah, when he did the whole thing, he unhooked it. And like you said, we talked about it ad nauseum, so I don't know how much time like we really need to spend on it.
Yeah,
I mean, I could still talk for a lot, because that's one of my fondest memories. You know, getting that pay per view, and then like, you know, everybody coming over to watch.
Yeah.
And when I say everybody, I mean Nana, Bobby, and Sharon.
Yeah.
And, you know, coming over to watch, and then Nana had enough, like, halfway through. Bob is like, all right, I'm coming back because I have to see Kurt and Eddie. I have to see the triple threat, and I have to see Undertaker and Kane.
Yeah.
And, like, I think he actually missed, like, half of, like, Eddie and Kurt.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever. And, He may have actually seen it. I don't remember. It was like 20 years ago. But, like, just how much, like, that, you know, those matches meant. And, like, Eddie and Kurt, because Eddie, it was such a beautiful story, like, how he won the title from Brock, and then he's going to defend it against Kurt. Nobody gave him a snowball's chance in hell. And then, like, when he started unhooking his bootlaces, and then Kurt goes to slap the ankle lock on him, and then he rolls Kurt up after his boot falls off and pins him. And it's just like, holy shit. Like, they believe in Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah. The boot, that it just, because, like, cheating has never and will never be glorified by a babyface ever again.
Yeah.
But the fact that Eddie was so enduring for being kind of, like, scummy, it's like, I lie, cheat, I steal. And people are like, fuck yeah, Eddie, you do all that shit. And, like, him, like, fucking hiding the thing in it, like, doing the thing with his boot to get out of the ankle lock. That's a smart thing that nobody would think of. And they've done it since, but that was, I think, the first, or if not one of the first finishes like that.
Yeah.
So it just, it was trend-setting, it was new, it was fresh, and it was a great finish.
Yeah, but like Eddie, and one of the...
Kurt being so pissed about it made it.
Yeah. Well, one of these days we will do an Eddie Guerrero top 10 best moments and matches, although that's going to be hard because I think there are so many.
Yeah.
Because like Eddie...
Top 20.
So we probably have to do a top 20.
For some of these guys, we might have to, yeah. But, like, because Eddie had so many, like, funny moments, too.
Yes.
Like, fucking the whole thing. I'm trying to think. Like, the one match where he's teaming up with Booker T I think it's like for the tag titles or something like that. And Eddie, like Booker was nowhere near the corner to make the tag. So Eddie moved the tag ropes to the middle, to the middle of the ropes.
He would need a top 10 matches and a top 10 moment.
Yeah. And Nick Patrick's just like, Eddie,
yeah,
back to the corner. He goes, no, tag ropes right here. I'm good. I'm good. Eddie, back to the corner. Or like when he's wrestling the Bashams in a handicap match and like the Shakita or Shaniqua or whatever the hell her name was.
Yeah.
Had the bullwhip. So Eddie poked her in the eye, took it from her, smacked one of the Bashams in the, because they had done the switcheroo.
Yeah.
Smacked one of the Bashams in the stomach with it and then whipped Nick Patrick in the ass.
Yeah.
And Nick Patrick says like, ow, 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 ow. And turns around. Eddie had already given the bullwhip back to the Basham.
And then the match like, no, no, we didn't need it.
Eddie won the match. It was so, so perfect. And like Eddie and Kurt had such great chemistry because they were able to do like so much with one another. Like another fond Eddie moment or Eddie and Kurt moment. Well, kind of, but Vince was involved in a lot of this too. Was when Vince fired Kurt as the general manager of SmackDown.
Yeah.
After Kurt had proved that he could, like, that he was mobile and not hurt anymore.
Yeah.
So he said, you're going to wrestle Eddie Guerrero at SummerSlam. And then Eddie comes out in the low rider, and he's just standing there, arms above the windshield. And then Vince is doing the Eddie dance.
Yes, that was funny.
Yeah. And then Vince gets in the low rider. And Eddie just starts making the lowrider do the lowrider things. And
yeah.
Vince is hanging on by for dear life.
Yeah.
It's like, holy shit. But, yeah, no. Eddie and Kurt, I think, was one of my favorite ruthless aggression rivalries. I mean, this is definitely one of my favorite ruthless aggression matches.
I would agree. Tenfold.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Probably number one or two.
Yeah. Number two. We have the last moment for Kurt. We have sexy Kurt.
Oh, boy.
When he was making fun of Shawn Michaels, he came out in the full get-up and he's singing the song, I'll make your ankles hurt.
I'm just the sexy Kurt. He has sensational Sherry. God bless her.
Yeah.
God rest her soul. R.I.P. Sherry.
Yes.
Yes.
And she's like, you know, because she came out, because Kurt was basically trying to just dig into Shawn Michaels' past, right?
Yeah.
He had done a match against Marty Jannetty, a match at which actually got Marty Jannetty rehired to the WWE, but then, of course, Jannetty fucked it up by getting drunk and arrested. But he had looked so good in that match with Kurt. And they did that Rockers reunion with Shawn and Marty on Raw or whatever when they wrestled La Resistance, and Marty looks so good to where JR's just like, if Kurt Angle thinks it's going to be a scrimmage on SmackDown against Marty Jannetty, the Olympic gold medal winner better think again. And then they opened up SmackDown, had like a 20-minute classic or whatever, and it was really good. Well, Kurt could work with anybody. I mean, if Giant Gonzalez were around, Kurt probably would have made that a passable match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, like, the whole thing where he's just like, if you thought Marty Jannetty was something, wait till you see what I have planned now. He comes out with Sherry, and then he's like, I'm just the sexy Kurt. And then Sherry goes, sexy Kurt. And Kurt's like, I'll make your ankle hurt.
It's so good.
Yeah. And then...
How do you want me to sing? Makes me want to sing that.
Cool, get thrown off the air. And then afterwards, like, Shawn shows up on the video screen and shows, like, a highlight package of his career. And then... Sherry's kind of smiling at Shawn. And then Kurt's like, hey, what are you doing? Like, I brought you out here. And then he asks Sherry to give him a kiss. So she goes to give him a kiss. He throws her down on the ground and then hooks her in the ankle lock. Which Sherry can take that shit.
Yeah.
Like, Sherry's one of the toughest bitches around. So it was, yeah, it was a hell of a moment.
Oh, definitely.
All right, boys, drum roll. Number one, and this is why Sexy Kurt was a perfect prelude to that, because we have WrestleMania 21, his match against Shawn Michaels. Probably
absolutely
the best.
Absolutely my favorite match.
It is. And your boy lost during it, but one of the best told stories in the ring I've ever seen. And usually, like, a guy being held in a submission, it really depends, especially if it's for a super long time. Like, because Angle had fucking Shawn in the ankle lock for, like, 5 minutes, it felt like.
Yeah.
It can either really work if it feels intense enough, both guys are into it, the crowd's into it, or it can be, like, very boring and very, like, what the fuck? Like, but Shawn was being so fucking Shawn and overselling and being entertaining. Fucking Kurt has that fucking face, and he's screaming and fuck at the top of his lungs, and the veins are popping out of his head as he's twisting the ankle. The crowd's kind of going nuts. And fucking Shawn finally taps after so long. It was just such a good, a great win for Kurt, a well-deserved win for Kurt at a WrestleMania that he really needed and deserved. Even though he doesn't last too much longer after this, I think this was a big win for Kurt.
Yeah. I mean, it was a big win for him. Unfortunately, he transitioned right into the, you know, I'm going to harass Booker T's wife program.
That might be unfortunate to you, but him trying to fuck Charmel was very entertaining as well. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
it was creepy.
Well, it was entertaining.
It was creepy, but...
It was entertaining, but it was creepy, and it's something that, like, would get Kurt thrown in jail today.
It does not age well at all, and they could never do it again. It was kind of the last of the edgy shit that they did.
Yeah.
But it was... If you watch, it was entertaining, though.
Yeah. Which, like, when he basically... Well, I don't even know if I can... say what he called Charmel.
Don't. But,
no.
Yeah, he was weird.
If you got to think if you should consider or not, usually...
Well, no, what I'm saying is that, like, I don't know, because I don't know how well the term has aged.
Yeah, that's what
I mean.
We're agreeing
with
you.
If you have
just
to think
say
about
it,
that means don't say it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Kurt and Shawn just put on one of the best WrestleMania matches I've ever seen. You got Mr. WrestleMania and Shawn. And even though he's lost a shit ton of matches, and you have a really great in-ring competitor like Kurt. And the intensity, the electricity,
yep,
the showmanship, everything about it was 10 out of 10 perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
yep. And Jim Ross made it even, commentary was even, made it even better too.
Yeah, you're right.
JR and King, like, they were the perfect people to call that.
Yes.
Like, you didn't need Michael Coleman, that miserable little bastard that was his broadcast partner. Yeah, no.
Maybe
it was one of those. And WrestleMania 21 isn't necessarily one of my favorite WrestleManias, but this match, you know, obviously ranks up there.
Yeah.
And we've covered WrestleMania 21, and this was actually number one on, like, our best WrestleMania matches list, right?
I think so, yeah. And it's
so
well-deserved. So at least we have good continuity.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And we usually
top
work
three
in the pattern.
Match of all time, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I love this WrestleMania as a whole, too, because it's like my guy's moment, and also you see the birth of John Cena. But this match is the best match on that card.
Absolutely.
Pretty much. It's kind of hard to argue that.
All right, boys, do we have final thoughts on Kurt Angle's career?
When he is definitely one of the greatest performers of all time. And also when he has to be funny, or not even when he has to be funny. He could be funny, like, and not even have to think about it.
Yes.
Like,
when he wants to be
funny. When you... like, if you show him something, you'll be like, hey, I want to do this tonight. Okay, cool. And he'll roll with it.
Yeah.
Even if he looks like an idiot and a little cowboy.
You go first.
That's
what I was thinking.
Sorry.
No, you're good.
Yeah, Kurt Angle, one of the best performers of all time in ring. He's a good promo. He'll turn anything into gold, I think. And
even his medal.
If you give him, as Doug said, he will take anything, and if they give it to him, he'll agree to it. He doesn't usually turn anything down. He was, both his WWE and TNA career are top notch. You can argue which one is better, but yeah, it's just a great career. We could go on with this list if we wanted to.
Yeah, we could. And maybe we will come back and revisit it. But I will say I have a lot of love and affection for this certain individual because, to me, he's one of the best workhorses. He's also one of the most intense, entertaining individuals I've ever seen in a wrestling ring. He seems like the sweetest fucking dude outside of it, even with all the shit he goes through. Like, now he just seems like a complete, humble, great human being.
Yeah.
He's funny. Yeah. His podcast is fun to listen to. He's just an overall just one of the best workers of all time. And also, like, to go into sports entertainment just as an amateur wrestler, you think this guy would be boring as shit. And as we prove going through this list, he clearly wasn't. He's one of the more entertaining guys. So there's just a lot of – I think Kurt Angle might be the most underrated wrestler ever. And he gets respect from his colleagues and from the fans, but not enough casual people know who Kurt Angle is. And
yeah, I was going to say, from the diehard fans, gets respect, but from casual fans, they only talk about like Austin, Hogan, and The Rock, and Undertaker.
Yeah.
Without Kurt Angle, there would be no John Cena. Let's remember that.
I'd agree. He definitely helped make it.
Very true.
There wouldn't be a lot of guys, but also without Kurt Angle, I don't know if there would be a level of legitimacy in wrestling that there is now.
Yeah.
And I don't think there would be a level of athleticism that there is now without him.
Right. And you got to remember, this is also a guy that helped make Edge, too.
Yeah. He helped make a lot of guys. He's just one of the best.
And Christian.
Well, I would say Edge more because...
Well, Christian in TNA, though, he's not wrong. They have matches in TNA.
I mean, yeah. I'm just saying, like, WWE.
He made Edge a star more than he ever made Christian a star.
Yeah.
All right, Doug, go to the plugs.
All right. Make sure you listen to Box Minute Smart, the wrestling outlet. Wednesdays, 10:15 Eastern Time on YouTube. Listen to us, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Unscripted Wrestling Podcast on Friday nights. Next week, we're going to bring back something we haven't done in a long time. And since Big Brother's not doing a Wednesday show this week, we'll have time. We're going to do a War Drums.
Ooh.
On Nitro and a Raw. But we're going to go backwards. We're going to go back to the beginning. Well, not to the very beginning, but we're going to go back to September of 1995. September 25th of 1995. On that episode of Raw, the main event was The Undertaker and the British Bulldog. On that episode of Nitro, the main event was Ming and Lex Luger, I believe. And also,
I thought you were going to go back to the first episode of Nitro.
No, because Raw didn't run opposition to him that night.
Okay.
So we're going to do that. Each episode's an hour. So we shouldn't fall asleep during them. But we'll do that. Tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time for Unscripted Unlimited. We're going to go through numbers, I think six through one or 5 through 1 of our top 10 Big Brother villains.
Yes.
So we got that. Sunday at whatever p.m. Eastern time Daniel and Mindy decide to do the Stabcast.
It's probably going to be around 7, and it's going to be our top 10 spooky movies for spooky season.
Okay.
Say
is
that.
This, is this like top 10 weekend or something?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then,
And then, of course, Eric and Clinton next week will be doing NFL Hard Hits either on a Tuesday or a Wednesday.
They're going to be talking about the top 10 quarterbacks.
Yeah. And Sharon's going to start her own show about top 10 favorite snack cakes.
Oh, yeah.
That actually sounds like a good idea.
Eric,
I'm actually kidding, but I may have just started something. So.
You might get hungry during it. All right.
That's a good idea. We should do that.
All right, little Debbie. We'll see you all next week.
Later, guys.
Bye.
See you tomorrow, Doug.
Well, not see you. I'll talk to you.
We love you.
Hell yeah.
Oh, okay.